For the American College of Cardiology, this is Dr. Kim Eagle, ACC.org Editor-in-Chief, with this week's Eagle's Eye View, your weekly cardiovascular update from ACC.org. In this podcast, and a subsequent podcast, I'm going to be covering the key points to remember about the new 2017 guideline for the prevention, detection, evaluation, and management of high blood pressure in adults. In this podcast, over the next 10 to 15 minutes, we'll talk about the general approach, screening, and follow-up of patients with hypertension. The new guideline is an update of the 7th report of the Joint National Committee on Prevention, Detection, and Evaluation and Treatment of High Blood Pressure, so-called JNC7, and this was published back in 2003. The 2017 guideline is a comprehensive guideline which provides new information from studies regarding blood pressure treatment, blood pressure monitoring, blood pressure thresholds to initiate antihypertensive therapy, the goals of treatment, the use of home monitoring, and several other important issues. So let's start with some definitions. The new guideline says, let's divide patients into normal, elevated, or stages 1 or 2 hypertension. Normal is defined as a blood pressure less than 120 over 80. Elevated blood pressure is 120 to 129 over less than 80. Stage 1 hypertension in this guideline is defined as a systolic of 130 to 139 or a diastolic of 80 to 89. And stage 2 is a systolic greater than or equal to 140 or a diastolic greater than or equal to 90. Before saying a patient has hypertension, it's important to use an average of at least 2 readings obtained on at least 2 occasions to estimate a patient's blood pressure. The guideline recommends that we use out-of-office and self-monitoring of blood pressure measurements, which can help confirm the diagnosis and help us with titration of blood pressure-lowering lifestyle and medical therapy. So corresponding blood pressures based on the site and methods used to measure blood pressure are the following. In the office, we would want the blood pressure less than 140 over 90. For home blood pressure monitoring, we want the blood pressure less than 135 over 85. For daytime ambulatory monitoring, 135 over 85. For nighttime ambulatory monitoring, less than 120 over 70. And for a 24-hour average blood pressure, less than 130 over 80. In general, if a patient has an untreated systolic reading of greater than 130, but less than 160, or a diastolic greater than 80, but less than 100, it is reasonable to screen for the presence of white coat hypertension, often with either daytime recordings or ambulatory monitoring before a diagnosis is rendered. Certainly in patients who have an elevated office reading, that is 120 to 129 over less than 80, but not meeting criteria for hypertension, this might be a group that you would consider screening for masked hypertension, where the blood pressure is higher out of the office than in the office. And this can be done with either home blood pressure monitoring or ambulatory monitoring. It's interesting to note what the risk of hypertension is in our society. For a 45-year-old adult without hypertension, the 40-year risk of developing it is 93% for African Americans, 92% for Hispanics, 86% for whites, and 84% for Chinese adults. In 2010, hypertension was the leading cause of death and disability-adjusted life years worldwide, and it contributes even more to events in women and in African Americans compared to whites. Often overlooked in the thinking about hypertension is the fact that the cardiovascular risk with hypertension increases in a log-linear fashion. What do I mean? Well, what I mean is that if your systolic pressure goes up 20 points, or the diastolic pressure is 10 points higher, each of those is associated with a doubling of the risk of stroke, heart disease, and other vascular diseases. Clearly, in people over the age of 30, higher systolic and diastolic pressures are associated with increased risk of cardiovascular disease, angina, myocardial infarction, heart failure, stroke, peripheral arterial disease, abdominal aortic aneurysm, etc. When we think about a patient with possible hypertension, it's important to screen for and manage the other cardiovascular risk factors in patients who have it. This would include smoking, diabetes, dyslipidemia, excessive weight, low fitness, unhealthy diet, psychosocial stress, and sleep apnea. In terms of basic testing that we should do when we encounter a patient with primary hypertension, that would include fasting blood sugar, a complete blood count, a lipid profile, a basic metabolic panel, a thyroid stimulating hormone level, urine analysis, electrocardiogram, and optionally an echocardiogram, uric acid, and getting a urinary albumin to creatinine ratio as well. In terms of screening for secondary causes of hypertension, some of the ideas here would be those who have new onset or uncontrolled hypertension on three or more drugs, abrupt onset, age less than 30 years old, excessive target organ damage, which might be cerebrovascular disease, retinopathy, LVH, HFpEF or HFrEF, obviously coronary disease, chronic kidney disease, peripheral artery disease, or the onset of diastolic hypertension in an older person, or the presence of hypertension and excessive hypokalemia, which might suggest aldosterone issues. Screening tests for patients like this would include looking for chronic kidney disease or renal vascular disease, screening for primary aldosteronism, looking for obstructive sleep apnea, looking for drug-induced hypertension. Potentially common causes might be nonsteroidals, steroids, androgens, decongestants and cold remedies, caffeine, monoamine oxidase inhibitors, and especially high doses of alcohol. For more specific clinical characteristics, secondary hypertension, the guideline has nice detailed thoughts about how to look for things like pheochromocytoma, Cushing syndrome, and others. Now, if we get to treatment, let's start with non-pharmacologic intervention. Weight loss for overweight or obese patients can be very helpful with a heart-healthy, sodium-restricted diet. Physical activity with a structured exercise program is very helpful. For alcohol, men should be limited to no more than 2 and women no more than 1 standard alcohol drinks per day. And the impact of the lifestyle changes is generally going to be in the range of a 4-5 millimeter decrease in systolic blood pressure and a 2 millimeter decrease in diastolic blood pressure. But remember the DASH diet. It's a diet low in sodium, low in saturated total fat, increase in fruits, vegetables, and whole grains. This can decrease systolic pressure in some patients by as much as 11 millimeters of mercury. So another concept that the guideline really covers nicely is that the benefit of pharmacologic treatment for blood pressure reduction is related to risk. So for a given magnitude reduction of blood pressure, fewer individuals in a higher risk group would need to be treated to prevent a cardiovascular event than in a lower risk group. So this guideline does a very masterful job in helping us start with the risk and then think about treatment. So the use of blood pressure lowering medications would be recommended for secondary prevention of recurrent cardiovascular events in patients with clinical cardiovascular disease who have a blood pressure above or equal to 130 or a diastolic blood pressure at or above 80. So that's in patients who have known cardiovascular disease, that you would initiate treatment at greater than or equal to 130 or greater than or equal to 80 diastolic. For primary prevention in adults who don't have a history of cardiovascular disease, the thresholds are different. You would do a cardiovascular risk estimation, looking for the 10-year risk of a cardiovascular event, and if it's above 10%, then the target would be, again, treating patients with a risk of greater than 10% at a threshold greater than or equal to 130 millimeters of mercury and or a diastolic pressure greater than or equal to 80. Now, you will encounter patients who have a 10-year risk estimate less than 10% who don't have cardiovascular disease. And for that group of people, the target to start treatment would be a systolic pressure greater than or equal to 140 and or a diastolic pressure greater than or equal to 90. Keep in mind that the prevalence of hypertension is lower in women until about the fifth decade of life, but actually is higher later in life in that group. There is no evidence that women versus men should have any difference in terms of thresholds. Now let's talk just briefly about follow-up. So for stage one hypertension or elevated blood pressure, it's reasonable to initiate non-pharmacologic treatment and reassess blood pressure in the 3 to 6 month interval. For patients who have stage one hypertension and a high cardiovascular risk, that's a greater than 10-year cardiovascular risk, they should be managed not only with non-pharmacologic therapy, but they should be given antihypertensive drug therapy and the blood pressure repeated in a month. Adults who have stage 2 hypertension should be treated within a month of initial diagnosis and typically a combination of both non-pharmacologic therapy and generally two drugs of different classes and should be reassessed typically within 1 month. For a very high average blood pressure, say greater than 160 systolic or greater than equal to 100 diastolic, really prompt evaluation and drug treatment followed by careful monitoring and upward dose adjustment is recommended. This guideline is a tour de force, and it brings us, I think, into a much more precision-based approach to a patient sitting before us. In my next podcast, we'll get into the principles for drug therapy in special populations, and we'll get deeper into that notion. So I want to thank you for listening to Eagle's Eye View. This is your weekly cardiovascular update from ACC.org. The guideline and the various aspects of our coverage of the guideline are available to you on ACC.org. Thank you very much.